Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamond Show quarterly market update episode for this, already the beginning of the third quarter 2018. I'm here with our resident expert economist and wealth advisor, Paul Sloat, founder of Green Drake Advisors based in Wayne, Pennsylvania. On today's market update episode, Paul will fill us in on the economic forces at work here in the United States and in the global economy and what those forces might do to the local real estate investment markets in the short and the long term. Things are changing a bit in the single family real estate market if you've been with us for any length of time, but it's probably not going to be as bad as a lot of people think. Here's Paul with the update. Mr. Paul Sloat, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dan. I'm glad to be here.
That's good. So for posterity's sake, June 29th, 2018, we are recording this going into the third quarter, the update for the market. So, Paul, how are you guys faring out there? What's the weather like in Philadelphia market?
Well, it's a beautiful sunny day here in the suburbs, high in the upper 80s, relatively dry, and not a cloud in the sky. And it's going to be a beautiful weekend, too. Hot, but beautiful. So we're looking forward to finally some true summer.
We are on the same page here in Chicago. I moved a little closer to downtown, and I actually can look out my office window and see the beach. And that is chock full of people now out there in Lake Michigan. So same weather, same beautiful weekend on the horizon here. Really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, about time, as they say.
All right, Paul, I will not take up too much of our listeners' time here with the pleasantries, and we'll get right into it. The floor is yours. Why don't we figure out what's going on in the economy that might impact us real estate investors?
All right, Dan. So as usual, why don't we start with the Federal Reserve? As you know, the Federal Reserve has been raising rates, and they just raised rates again this month. And they plan to raise rates two more times this year and continue to raise them in 2019. The only problem with that is if they continue to raise rates and the yield curve continues to flatten the way it has, they will invert the yield curve by the middle of next year. And in fact, we have begun to see articles in newspapers about them inverting the yield curve. So we think that this is beginning to permeate the conscience of people. And in addition to raising rates, the Fed has been taking lots and lots of money out of the money supply. And as we've said before, if they really do what they say they're going to do, we would expect there to be a recession in 2020. But that is the real question. We think that there are good reasons why they will pause, not the least of which we think is that Donald Trump, who has already formed his reelection committee for 2020, is going to start criticizing the Fed for being too restrictive for money this fall, going into the election. In addition, we think, given that we've had a big tax cut, if the Fed causes a recession, it will be only them to blame. In other words, Congress will blame them, the president will blame them, and the public will blame them. The Fed, as we have pointed out in the past, is a political animal and will do what is necessary for its survival. So in order to survive and not have the whole world come down on it, we would expect them to pause at some point. In fact, in the last 2 days, there was an article that we read talking about how the Fed planned to stop withdrawing or undoing quantitative easing much sooner than people think. That is because they're beginning to see some of the negative impact of doing those things. So what we can say is that we expect at some point the Fed to go on hold just as it went in the 1960s. For the economy to have a slowdown in 2019, and we think if the Fed stays on hold long enough, the economy will re-accelerate into 2020 and 2021, at which time inflation will rise to levels that the Fed can justify squeezing the economy, but not until then. So while we expect the slowdown next year, it looks like the Fed's beginning to get the political message that they're going to need to slow down. The other things that are on the Fed's plate are two things. They've been raising rates. The rest of the world has not. That's driven the U.S. dollar upward. The U.S. dollar going upward is not stimulatory to the economy, as it makes U.S. goods less attractive in the rest of the world. Well, with that coming, we would expect that the Fed is beginning to rethink what the economy is going to look like, and coupled with long leading indicators that already indicate a slowdown in 2019, they are really reconsidering their economic forecast. So, as a result, we are looking for a recession in late 2021 or 2022, compared to the 75% of the National Association of Business Economists who are looking for it in 2020. We think the Fed is going on pause. And we think that if it doesn't go on pause, it's going to put itself in hot water, which the Fed tries to avoid. And lastly, the public at large is just beginning to enjoy the fruits of the economic expansion after a decade in the wilderness. And should the Fed put them back into the wilderness, I think the Fed will be in trouble with the public at large. So with that as background, let's talk a little bit about what's going on for housing. Prices continue up, according to the latest data. They are up 6.5% year over year. In our mind, they are getting close to the point where they are going to stop going up. And why do I say that? I say that for a couple of reasons. Firstly, incomes are only going up 3% year over year. Secondly, mortgage rates have been going up. Each change of 1% in mortgage rates is equal to a 13% increase in the payments on a 30-year mortgage. With the rise in home prices and the rise in interest rates, the cost to buy the same house is up 20% compared to a year ago. We think this is beginning to cause agitation for some buyers and more siphoning out the marginal buyer, which is the millennial. In fact, year over year, pending home sales have been slowing. They are now up a little over 4% year over year, and they are flat for the last 5 months. If they don't start growing soon, they will move back to the zero line. So we are seeing a slowdown on housing. The one thing we will note about housing is that the market is bifurcated. And by bifurcated, what we mean is that entry-level single-family homes continue to sell like hotcakes. But the more expensive homes, the mover-uppers, they tend to be sitting there. And that is just merely a fact of demographics. The millennials are buying their first homes and are in no position to buy the bigger homes that the baby boomers are selling if they retire and downsize. So when we look at things, we see a mismatch in where the supply is in the market and the demand. and we do not think this will be solved for a couple more years as housing starts to continue to trend upward, but are racing to catch up with demand. And one of the big laggards and the reason housing starts have not moved at a faster clip is the public company. They have not added new communities at the rate that they should and have been losing share to private builders. And we expect that this will change over the next couple of years as these big public companies have started to accumulate land to open new communities. So we think that by 2021, we will see a significant increase in the number of single-family homes coming to market, especially at the lower end. So let's talk about what's going on with the demand for homes versus the demand for apartments. If we were to look at the household survey data put out by the federal government, what we are seeing is that the number of households that buy homes and own homes continues to increase. This is the millennials moving into their prime home buying years. However, what we are also seeing is that the number of families renting homes is decreasing. This makes sense as the millennials rent less, and as the baby boomers sell their homes to downsize to smaller pieces of real estate that they own. Maybe it's a smaller home, maybe it's a condo, or maybe it is investing in a piece of real estate in an assisted living facility. Either way, it's all about real estate ownership. It's not about real estate rental. At the same time, we see the multifamily area with the same level of additions of units as we saw back in the 80s. Now, I'm not that smart, Dan, but when I look at that market, we're seeing supply growing with demand flat to falling. That's usually not a good prescription for pricing and margins in any industry, and we expect it to ultimately come home to roost in the multifamily area. In particular, we think that the real you-know-what will hit the fan when we enter into recession in late 2021 and 2022. And the reason for that is between 2020 and 2025, there is zero growth in the key demographic for rental housing. So while single-family homes as rentals may do fine, as millennials, even if they can't afford a home, will want to move into a school district for their kids to ensure their kids a good education, apartments won't be the same. And we would expect that rents relative to incomes will fall over time, and that the returns on these rental properties will gradually diminish. So let me talk about some other classes of real estate where we see some problems coming down the line. One of those is self-storage. The industry continues to build units, and unfortunately, that is an area that could have a real problem in a recession. Units are catching up with demand after many years of really limited capacity additions. You spent $3.2 billion in CapEx last year. You're projected to spend $3.4 billion this year. And by the way, that is 1.5 to 2 times what was spent pre the recession in real terms, and adding at least 50% more square footage per year than before. So what's happening is supply is rapidly catching up with and exceeding demand. For those who forget, the occupancy in self-storage in the last recession fell to 75%. Today, it is at 92, 93% for the industry. Should it continue to add supply and we have a disruption to the economy in a few years, it is easy to see capacity utilization going into the mid to low 80s and potentially going into the upper 70s. That's not good for any piece of real estate, and we expect it to be not good for self-storage. As we look at other areas of real estate, they are doing okay. Hotels are doing fine because they're benefiting from a strong economy. If anybody hasn't noticed, the U.S. economy is growing faster than it did under President Obama, under President Trump. The reason for this is simple. He has unleashed investment into the economy. Investment is critical for productivity growth and long-term economic growth. In addition, investment, something which the U.S. has not done for 20 years, adds new capacity in order to allow the economy to grow. And lastly, if we look at the way the government bean counters compute productivity, if we don't produce more stuff, productivity is zero or negative. So as the U.S. allowed all these foreign countries to siphon off incremental demand by filling up their plants, U.S. plants did not grow in their output, so productivity collapsed. Surprise, surprise, with President Trump putting some tariffs in place and unit volume growth accelerating in manufacturing, guess what? Productivity has started to improve. This is not really rocket science. Areas in real estate that we like include hotels. At least while the economic recovery is ongoing, hotels do not have oversupply. Now, we have to be a little careful here. Hotels are growing supply, but demand is growing at about the same pace as supply. And the faster economic growth is helping to ensure that supply and demand stay in balance. The risk to hotels will come in the next downturn when supply keeps coming, as it takes a couple of years to build a hotel and demand trails off. But we do not see it being as bad as in 2008 when demand collapsed. That is because we see manufacturing and other business sectors of the economy growing through the recession, and this will enable the hotel industry to see demand really strengthen once the recession is over. Very different perspective. And even within hotels, if you were to look at where the capacity is coming, it's coming at the upper end of the capacity strength in terms of what people pay for a room. And if we were to look at the lower areas, such as budget hotels, there is little to no capacity being built there. So those areas should do quite well. I would be remiss if I did not talk a little bit about trade and tariffs and what's going on the cost side. We see the tariffs increasing material costs, and that coupled with a tight market for labor is increasing overall construction costs. Lennar Inc., one of the major public home builders, recently talked about this in the past week on their conference call. Their labor costs are running up 7% year over year, and their material costs are running up 8%. And materials are for things like cement, aggregates, asphalt shingles, etc. We do not see any relief on the raw material side, partly due to tariffs, but also partly due to the tightness in the global economic system. In addition, which is something to think about, oil prices are pretty well supported by supply and demand and are more likely to go up over the next year than down. And this is because places like Venezuela are seeing their oil production collapse. So even with all the additional oil being produced in the U.S., and even with additional oil from OPEC, it is likely that global inventories will continue to decline over the next year. And if they decline this way, it means oil prices could go from $65 to $80 or more. That would be a big surprise to people because of what's going on with electric vehicles. They say, oh, electric vehicles are here. Crude shouldn't be so strong. Well, yes, electric vehicles are here, but for the average household, they are not here, and they won't be here until about 2022 until 2025. In the meantime, oil demand is what's going to matter, and it is going to have an impact on everything. So, oil demand continues to rise despite the rise in oil prices, and oil prices are set up to have another big run next year. If this happens, it will cause inflation to pick up in many areas of the economy, including the materials everyone buys for their job sites, including the cost of getting those materials from wherever they are to the job site. Now, longer term, there are some relief valves coming for the commercial construction area. They include robotics, automation, 3D manufacturing. They are all coming and will ultimately reduce the amount of labor that you use on the job site. But as we say, they are coming. They are in the future. They are not today. So as a builder, what you have to think about is that your costs are going up, whether for labor or materials, at the same time as pricing is likely to level out, and this may cause a squeeze on your profit margins. So you have to be careful, and it isn't going to get easier from here because asset values are probably going to go sideways for a while as interest rates rise and the cap rates rise, which basically means you as a real estate investor will get lower multiple on his cash flow in the future than today. And that is my quick update of where we are today, Dan. Do you have any questions?
I do, Paul. The first question I have written down here is, most of us in the REI Diamond Show audience are going to be involved in residential real estate. And so a few things that would be important from my perspective, who would be some of the public home builders beside Lennar that would be worth us keeping an eye on, maybe setting up a Google Alert, reading the annual shareholders report, et cetera, if any?
Well, I would look at this usual suspects. You have Toll Brothers, you have Lennar, you have KB Homes. These are all well-known public companies. There are a half dozen. And what you can do is, if you go to something like Yahoo Finance, what you can do is put in the symbol for, let's say, Toll Brothers or Lennar. For Toll, it's T-O-L. For Lennar, it's L-E-N. And hit return, and what it will do will come up with the stock price, a little chart, but on the right, usually it will come up with a list of their competitors, or you look in the various little pieces of information you can get in statistics and other things. You'll get a list of all the competitors, and that will give you a list of all the public home builders so you can track this for yourself. The data I cited from Lennar is what was disclosed in its conference call this week. So it was just a few days ago. So as we say, it's hot off the presses.
Perfect. If I ask you, Paul, from a single family residential investor, builder, etc., we talked about the interest rates, and I'm sure that would be one, but what would be three pieces of information if I were to keep an eye on that would be most pertinent for me, the residential real estate investor, you know, continuously, not just for our quarterly market updates, but what will be important as a leading indicator that things are starting to change?
So there are a couple of things I would keep an eye on. One is the overall level of interest rates, right? Two is the shape of the yield curve. If it inverts, it's likely we're headed to a recession in anywhere from 8 to 24 months, and you should run your business accordingly. Number three, we would look at housing affordability. That's published by the National Association of Realtors, and the NAR, N-A-R, will give you a leading indicator on the affordability of homes. So those are three quick things that I would focus on. I would point out that affordability has been declining, especially in the last year, and that will impact your housing turnover. That will impact the rise in prices. We see that you can't have prices going up 6.5% per year every year if incomes are only going up 3%. There is a point where the banks just won't lend more money based on people's incomes. So I think you've kind of reached a point where it's going to be very hard for the banks to provide and support prices going up 6.5% a year. And so when you look at those things, your real risk here is that prices flatten out at the same time that all your costs continue to elevate. Is that helpful?
It does. I remember 2008, 9, 10. I don't have statistical information myself. I just know it was bad. And that's the conversation I have at our networking events when I'm meeting, you know, people face to face over coffee, having lunch with investors, agents, you know, the list goes on, phone conversations. And the consensus is obvious that, you know, the growth cannot continue indefinitely, but it seems like a lot of people are of the belief that it's going to be a repeat of 2008, 9, and 10. It certainly has changed. Yours and my conversation, the tone of your report on single family has changed. It was strong for, you know, the last 2 years or so, and probably before that, before we even started doing this, as single family housing and the demand is looking good. But now we've looked at 4 months or so with slowing, flat growth. And I know that my personal experience, last year we saw a crazy run up in a number of neighborhoods, these eye popping, you know, $40,000-$50,000 price increases in certain areas in Philadelphia and Chicago. And we're not seeing that same, you know, rapid price increase. And it feels, you know, like I said, not statistically, at least from my perspective, but the feeling is that we're flattening out and we're coming to a place where it's more normalized. Paul, in your opinion, do you think we're looking at something that's going to be like a repeat of 2008, or is there some reason and something that we should expect that might be slightly less traumatic for single family real estate investors here in the next 2-3 years or so?
Well, I think it's going to look nothing like 2008, Dan. And here's the reasons why. The reason 2008 was so bad is because we blew up the financial system. In other words, we bankrupted the banking system. When you bankrupt the banking system, that means the flow of credit to the economy is cut off. The difference this time around, we put in pretty draconian legislation, and the banks have not been able to get themselves in trouble. As a result, guess what? Their balance sheets look pretty good. So even if they were to have some loan losses, it really wouldn't impact in a major way the availability of credit. So that's one key difference. The other key difference is we haven't put a lot of people into houses that don't belong there. We've been reasonably consistent with credit standards, so we don't have a lot of people who shouldn't own a home. That's number two. Number three, unlike in the last recession, demographics are in your favor. The millennials are moving into their prime home buying years. and it is likely they are going to provide an underpinning to the market even through a recession. In our opinion, this will look much more like the period 98 to 2002 than it will look like the period 2006 to 2010. So does that answer your question?
It does, much more effectively than my thoughts and words could articulate. So great, Paul. I have a lot of notes here. I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing this insight and perspective on the economy here in June 2018. Do you want to give a bit of contact information out for listeners who might want to know what you do and how they can get in touch with you?
Sure, Dan. You can contact us. We are located in Wayne, Pennsylvania, but you can contact us over the internet by going to our website at www.greendrakeadvisors.com, or you can call our offices at 610-687-7766. We provide significant wealth management and wealth planning for our clients, particularly those that own businesses or have private investments. It's part of our expertise. We also, particularly for our real estate clients, look at their portfolios of real estate and help them to analyze and understand the value of that portfolio, what kind of returns they're making on that portfolio, and where they should be allocating capital, and maybe where they should be pruning their portfolio. So that should give your listeners a little better sense of what we do, which we haven't really discussed.
All right. Thank you again, Paul, for coming on the show. And we will catch up with you in a few months for the next update.
All right. Take care, Dan.
And thank you, my loyal listener, for checking out this episode of the REI Diamond Show. If you are interested in checking out the next episode pre-release before the email goes out, please subscribe on YouTube or one of the podcasting apps, including iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. If you have investment capital sitting on the sidelines, not already earning above average returns, you might want to check out SuperchargedReturns.com. When you enter your email address there, I will send you an email the next time I have an upcoming private mortgage investment opportunity, usually available in Chicago, Atlanta, Florida, or Philadelphia. Those private mortgages are then used to fund my fix and flip projects, as well as some short-term, exciting for investors, 90 days or less wholesale deals. Again, that site is SuperchargedReturns.com. Finally, if you have certain questions or topics you'd like to hear discussed on a future episode, or maybe you have a guest suggestion, somebody that you'd like to see me invite on the show, or just want to reach out and say hello, you can contact me by clicking on the Contact Dan link at reidiamonds.com. And you can also find links to check out profitable real estate deals that I might have available as well. That site again is reidiamonds.com. You can also sign up to receive notifications of future episodes at that site. And in doing so, you will receive a welcome email with my book on wholesaling or getting started with no money called Become a Wholesale Real Estate Master. That's a 164-page PDF book. That site again is reidiamonds.com. Thank you once again for being a loyal listener of the REI Diamond Show. Dan Breslin here, signing off.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.